You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates. You're listening to Absolute Empowerment with Coach Jeff Connors on The Sports Objective. Join Coach C, the USA Strength and Conditioning Hall of Famer, every Monday night to see in a variety of guests, including former players, former and current coaches, pastors, and others will discuss relevant issues in coaching today's athlete, with the goal of equipping the athlete and those coaching them with the physical, mental, and spiritual armor necessary to live their best life. Here's Coach Connors.
Welcome to Absolute Empowerment. I'm Jeff Connors, and tonight we have a very special guest, former 10-year NFL quarterback, pro bowler, and ECU Hall of Famer, David Garrard. David, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Coach. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. So I'm going to welcome my sponsor and get right back to you. We want to talk about Ed Watkins Marine. Ed Watkins Marine has two locations to serve you, as they are located in Denver and Cornelius, North Carolina, in the greater Charlotte area of our state. He has fishing boats, pleasure boats, pontoon boats, center consoles, family-friendly bow riders, trailers, engines, and UTVs. He has all the brands you're seeking: Sea Pro, Suncatcher, Pontoons, Tritoon, Stingray, Yamaha, Suzuki, Mercury, Vex's Bass Boats, Explore Skiffs, and more. Whether you're looking for a new boat or to repower your existing boat, Ed Watkins can help you with your boating needs. Visit them online at edwatkinsmarine.com. We appreciate Big Ed's support of the show, and Big Ed was definitely the most enthusiastic and positive player I have ever coached. Thank you, Big Ed. All right. So, Dave, you know where to go if you need that boat. You probably already have a couple.
We got one.
All right. That's what I figured down there in Florida. Good stuff. So, Dave, what I'm going to do is, first of all, I just want to tell you how honored I am to have you on. It was certainly my pleasure and my privilege to coach you, I guess, for the majority of your collegiate career. And, you know, we can kind of talk about that senior year a little bit later. But I want to kind of go in reverse today in relationship to how I usually do the show. So first thing I'm going to do is go straight to your family and talk about, talk about your wife, talk about, basically what you do as a family. I met your son a week or two ago, and he is a large man for his age, and I'm sure that he's going to be a very good football player once he reaches the collegiate ranks, and he's a big guy.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about him, a little bit about your family.
Yeah, so my wife, Mary, she is the love of my life. We met at ECU. She played tennis at ECU, and I've seen her a few times, and I just knew there was something different about her. And once we started dating, we never stopped, got married, and we have three wonderful kids. Like you said, my son, Justin, he's 16. He's about 6'4", 350. And then my two girls, they're a year and 9 days apart, McKenna and Sydney. They're 11 and 12, and they're both on travel softball teams. So we're just a big sports family. That's definitely what we believe in. And my wife, who has a PE degree from ECU, she really wanted to be able to, get into the coaching world. And she's so happy that her kids are in sports, because now she's one of the head coaches of our girls travel team. And she's really good at what she does. She loves on those girls, and I'm an assistant, so I'm there to help and make sure she's not running around too crazy, and the girls aren't causing her to feel too crazy. Sometimes, you know how 10 and 11 year old, 12 year old girls are, just kids in general. But she really manages and does everything here in the household, and honestly, everything. She makes sure everybody's on time for their stuff, and I just try to make sure I'm where I'm supposed to be when she tells me I should be there. So, she's great. my son, who is a sophomore in high school now. He's at Fletcher High here in Jacks Beach. And he is thrilled and excited about the love of football and what he can have and the opportunity he may have one day. You know, he just tells me all the time, Dad, I just want to go wherever anybody wants to give me a scholarship. And I tell him all the time, don't worry, you'll be able to get one of those. Let's just make sure we maximize the abilities that you have and make sure that we put your best foot forward every time you step on that field so you can make everybody want to give you a scholarship. So he's about that, yeah. And my two girls, they're just the best. They really are. They live, eat, breathe everything mom and dad tells them to do. I know not many kids can do that and say that, but ours do. At least one of them. Our youngest, she is definitely a handful, which she's probably the best athlete in the family, but she kind of thinks she knows everything it is to sports already and life already, of course, at 11. But, you know, we like to guide her with love as much as we can to keep her, you know, from thinking she knows everything. So, but they're all wonderful kids and, you know, really good in school. And, you know, I'm just thankful that their mom is here to really make sure that they're on the right track.
That's awesome. I love having people on the show like yourself, who is, in my opinion, the model husband and father, and a great example to any other athlete coming up through college and at some point in their life wanting to settle down and raise a family the right way. And yeah, it's kind of interesting with your daughters. One of my things that I'm involved in now, you know, in my retirement is training this family, and I have an 11-year-old, and just had him out there. He loves basketball and plays every weekend in tournaments. And you know, I grew up wrestling, so I'm not a basketball guy. So I had to learn a lot about basketball to help him.
Yeah,
so it's pretty funny, but we took 236 shots last night.
Oh man.
So as you could imagine, I've got a system. It's kind of like a game. I give him points and I give him a grade at the end of our sessions. And sometimes he's got to dribble around a certain cone pattern and do a layup. Sometimes he's got to stop and do a, you know, get that floater up in there. And sometimes he gets bonus shots from outside. So very familiar with that age.
Yep.
And that's a new interesting challenge for me. But awesome to hear about your family. Now, do you have any family traditions?
Family traditions. Well, you know, once we get around the holidays, of course, we have those family traditions.
Yeah.
But we tend to we're the family that eats around the dinner table when we can, because everybody's doing training, sports somehow. And we like to put a show on that we all agree on. And we like to sit there for as long as we're eating and try to sit down as a family and enjoy one another's company. I mean, I did not think about this when I was a youngster, how much sports keeps the family like all over the place. If you have other brothers and sisters that are doing other things, well, they've got their practices to go to. They've got their games to go to, their training to go to. So, you know, sitting down at the dinner table is something that I think even us, we should do more often when we can. But as far as the tradition, usually it's just holiday tradition stuff. One of our favorite traditions is coming to North Carolina to go to Gaston. We have a little place up there. We have been going there since 2005. My wife put me on to Lake Gaston up there in, you know, Warren County, Littleton, Carolina area. I knew nothing about it. And when she put me on to it, we found us a little place up there. We haven't looked back. So most summers we go up there. It used to be when I played and the kids were real small, we'd go up there all summer long. But now we just try to get one, maybe 2 weeks in later in the summer when everybody's gotten their softball games out of the way. My son has done most of his summer training with the school, and we can sneak away for a week or two is our opportunities now. So it's coming far and few in between to be able to get away like that. But, you know, it's kind of a must when you do, because you know it. Once they get out of the house, it's hard to get them to come back around sometimes.
Gotcha. Awesome. Now, is there anything that you kind of brought from your own family tradition growing up into your family?
Yeah, I think, you know, with me and my family, it was a childhood that, you know, it probably was tougher than most. You know, I lost my mother at 16. My parents had split when I was, you know, maybe 8. So my father wasn't around nearly as much. He'd come to visit my mother when she passed at when I was 16. There was really no other adult like that parent in the house. So my oldest brother, Anthony, he basically just said, you know what, I'm going to just make sure to keep my brother and my sister's 2 years younger than me, I'm going to make sure that they, you know, get through high school and get off to college or whatever. And so he kind of put his life on hold to be able to make sure, you know, we were able to, you know, go off and do the things that we wanted to, you know, so there wasn't really a lot of traditions growing up, like I said, other than the holidays. And for me, it was just, you know, being all in my sports as much as I could. And, you know, the free time that I did have, it was usually, you know, just hanging with my friends, you know, trying to do my best to stay out of trouble, because I knew I had a bigger purpose in life. So I didn't want to mess that up, and I didn't want my mom to, you know, kind of look down and think that I was messing things up, messing up the abilities that I was given by God, and, you know, messing up the chances that I may have in my future at that time. So, you know, that was my main focus. So, yeah, we didn't have, other than holidays, a lot of traditions, probably why we don't have a lot of traditions now, you know, growing up. But we're making some, though.
Well, you've done an incredible job.
Thanks.
Well, I would definitely... I gotta basically congratulate you on what you've done with your life, you know, from the time that I met you, you know, all the way up to now. So great job, man.
Oh.
So I'm kind of going going backwards here. So I'm going now to your NFL career.
Yeah.
And, so one of the things I want to ask you is, you know, as someone who's played the NFL for, you know, a dozen years, made the Pro Bowl, and kind of knew the ins and outs of it, is what were some of the myths you think that were perpetuated about the NFL, whether they were good or bad? Can you think of anything there?
Well, yeah, you know, there's, you know, there's a lot of movies that have come out, you know, kind of portraying sports players, football players, NFL guys, that kind of stuff, you know. And there's probably a lot of truth to a lot of things, but, you know, the one thing that gets me when I do watch some of these sports shows, like I know one, for instance, Ballers, you know, it's, you know, it's a very entertaining show, but they put every negative thing that can happen in one person's career, they put it all in like 1 hour. So everybody thinks, because they've never seen in locker rooms, they've never seen what goes on with players when they're out and about and that kind of stuff. And so they think, they kind of categorize everybody as being like that, you know. And, you know, most of the guys are just regular guys, you know. Right. But you do have some standout players, or even some players that want to be standout players. They want to mimic what the guys that look like they're balling, quote unquote, they want to, you know, be able to live that same kind of lifestyle. And first of all, you got to have the funds for it. But then football ends for everybody, you know, and it ends really early in life, believe it or not, you know, for football players. So you don't get to go off into your 50s and 60s and, you know, keep playing the sport and finally develop the maturity that it takes to be, you know, a real pro's pro. You got to, hopefully you got some, you know, vets on your team that are teaching you that kind of stuff early so that the learning curve for you doesn't happen later in your career. You can, you know, make strides early on in your life and in your playing career so that mistakes don't slow you down, because gosh, there's a lot of things out there trying to pull at an athlete that's made it to the pros, a lot of things. And the one thing that everybody kept telling me, like my agent, who was a great man, good Christian man, he would say, there's nothing out there that can make you more money than what you do on the field. What you do on the field is going to surpass anything at any point in any time in your life, unless you hit the lottery. There's nothing else that can pay you more. So, you know, people that want to focus on their after career stuff, which is great. You want to have an idea of what you want to do when you're done playing, but don't let it distract from, you know, the job that you have right now, because when it's gone, it's really hard to get back in there. You know, some guys walk away from it maybe a little early and they think, you know what, I still got some more left in me. Let me go back and try to get back in there. Once you're out of there, it's really hard. Unless you're a quarterback, it's hard to get back in the NFL if you've taken a year off because you retired or something like that. It just, because they're always looking for the younger, cheaper guy. And, you know, you got to continue to stay focused on your craft when you're in there. But, you know, there's everything you can think of that has happened in the NFL. It happens in every locker room, you know, a lot of crazy stuff. But most of it is good. Most of it is good stuff. Most of it is guys going out in the community, supporting the people in their community, the kids in their community. That's probably the number one thing for the guys, is how can we support the youth? Because honestly, when you first get to the league, you're still a kid yourself, you know, 25, 26. That is, now that I'm 46, that is really young, Coach. I mean, you know that too. You're a man at that time, but you're still super young mentally when it just comes to life. And so if you can give back, the best thing that you can do is give back to those kids that are dreaming of being in your position one day. And, you know, especially a lot of these guys that come from small rural communities, you know, the best thing that they do is they go back to those communities and they have football camps at their local high schools, and they bring a bunch of their teammates to come support them with their camps. And this is probably the one and only time some of these kids will ever see a professional athlete,
right,
when they go to the camp. So those kind of things are amazing and impressive, because I remember I've told everybody, you know, this story. Dwayne Washington was at NC State. He was a defensive back. I remember his name. He played in the NFL for like 16 years or 18, long time, Dwayne Washington. He came to my middle school when I was in eighth grade, and I was a Wolfpack fan at that time. And he came and spoke to a group of minority males. The group was called, it was like a before school, sometimes after school thing. It was called Save Our Males. And they would have local police officers come in. They would have athletes come in. They would have people at different businesses come in that kind of looked like us so that we could see that there was more than just running the streets.
Right.
Came in and he talked to all of us. And I just kept thinking, this is one of my favorite players on, you know, my college team. He's in here talking to us. And our assistant principal was his cousin. And so she brought three or four guys that she knew had an opportunity in sports to go, you know, maybe to a college level if they, you know, stayed focused and that kind of stuff. And so she let him talk to them individually, and I was one of them. So I got to talk to him, and it was the coolest thing ever. I was so excited that I was in there talking to him. Don't even remember what he said, but I was just so happy that I was talking to him. Well, fast forward maybe 15 years, and he's sitting, I'm with the Jaguars, and we just brought Dwayne Washington in and during training camp and all this. And I'm like, I have played long enough to where now I am actually on the team with one of my favorite players growing up as a kid. And I told him that story. And he's like, well, you know, Dave, I don't remember that story because I don't remember a lot of the stories when I go see a bunch of kids. But I just told him, and he was like, man, that is really cool. He was like, he was kind of like me, you know. I'm glad that, you know, me being there somehow helped you focus a little bit more on school and, you know, hopefully shaping your direction just a little bit and staying positive and making sure that you did everything possible to give yourself a chance to go off to college and play ball. So that's a really cool story, I think.
Absolutely. So, tell me what you think is very important about, like, in spending your day in relationship to preparation as an NFL quarterback. What was the most important in relationship to your preparation? Was it the film room? What was most important in relationship to how you prepared?
Yeah, for me, a lot of it absolutely is film room. That's the, you know, one place you're going to be able to break down your opponent and see any and all little tales that they'll give you. Hand gestures by the defense sometimes will let you know that they're switching to a different defense, and you can't see that kind of stuff just watching you know, tape like you're watching TV. You gotta go in there and really, like, look at each individual player. But also your quarterback coach and your offensive coordinator, having a great relationship with them really wanting to pour into you as much as possible. Because, you know, you normally they're in their 30s and their 40s. And so they're usually much older. So they can usually, they're not the ones, you know, being pulled by other teammates to go out to dinner or off to the club or any of that kind of stuff. So they're focused on keeping their job. And their job is making sure you're at your best every Sunday. And so, but I think that's a big part. But I think the biggest part was whenever I would pull my receivers, my running backs, my tight ends, whenever I would get my skill players together, you know, on an off day, and we all meet up at the facilities so we could all go watch film together. And they can listen to me talk them through different plays, different looks, different coverages of what I'm seeing. But then I can listen to them as receivers, and they're going to tell me, hey, look, when he's in his stance like this and he's pressing hard, like, this is what I'm going to do on these particular routes. So if I can get the ball at this time, it's, you know, it helps me out so much better. So whenever a quarterback isn't just, you know, off to themselves, just trying to study and focus on their crafts for themselves, but they're actually bringing all their teammates in there and everybody's conversating and everybody's talking and everybody's discussing, you know, that's when you really build that good team camaraderie. And as an offense, it really helps everybody out, because then everybody can be on the same page. You know, I guarantee you that's what Tom Brady and those guys did most of their careers. They're going to make sure they're all on the same page. So everybody's going to watch film at some time together. And then sometimes you get home and you know, if you're married at that time, or, you know, you got plenty of money, you can cater food, have the guys over. Maybe it's a Monday night game. Hey, get here at this time so we can watch a little film beforehand. And then we're going to just hang out and watch the game, you know. Yeah. So there's always little things that you can do to build that camaraderie and to build that chemistry between one another.
Gotcha. Yeah, back in the 90s, when I was basically just trying to be like a sponge.
Yeah.
Try to learn anything I possibly could learn. I'd visit the Oilers, the Cowboys, the Broncos, the Steelers, the Jaguars, and the Packers.
Mm.
So I'd just call the strength coach and say, hey, man, I'd like to come in for a few days. What do you think? Hey, yeah, come on in.
Yeah.
And it was interesting to me because, you know, they weren't working like extremely hard sometimes.
No.
They were I'd look at the workout and I'd say, well, you know, this is fairly an easy workout. I mean, you know.
Absolutely, 100%.
Okay, you're gonna bend a little bit, work on your flexibility, you know, do some warm-ups and, you know, lift a little bit, but not necessarily very heavy, unless you're a lineman. You know, the linemen seem to be working kind of hard at times, especially the O-line. We're trying to keep their strength, but it was interesting to me that everybody was getting paid to come in and work out. And that was additional money. And then I noticed in a few instances tension, you know, between the strength coach a little bit and the players at times. And so I was like, you know, yeah, I'm not too sure this is like the ultimate place you want to be as a strength coach. I mean, you know, but
it's, you know, Coach, I'm 100% in agreement with you. It's not. I mean, other than you get to say you're with this team and that kind of stuff, it gives you that kind of recognition. But college for strength and conditioning, like if you really want to be immersed and feel like you are making a difference with players, college is where it's at. Because a lot of times you get guys in like me, they're out of shape, never really been in shape. And you get to mold them into a finely tuned athlete. When you get to the pros, they're already finely tuned and they've already gone through college. So they know how to train. They know how to work out. And honestly, when you're there as a strength and conditioning coach in the pros, you're just guiding them, making sure they're following your schedule and they're actually doing the work. Because honestly, some of them, they don't really want to work out that hard anymore. You know, they just, as long as they still are fit and can do their job, some of them, that's all they care about. You know,
I also see now where the players grade the coaches. And I noticed that, I'm not going to name any names, but I noticed a strength coach in a certain team got like a D minus from the team. I'm like, okay. And, he wasn't there very long either. You know, I guess, you know, they made a change in the head coach, of course, but, you know, that happens. But I thought that was very interesting as well. Yeah, all very interesting stuff. So let's get into the college career now. And where you got your nickname, the out of control beer truck. And when you came in and I met you, you were 269 pounds, as I remember. Was that correct?
I always say 268, but I'll add.
Okay.
Makes the story better.
So, we kind of got on a mission to get your weight down because you're going to play quarterback. And, I didn't really know what to do. I wanted to really kind of give you a mentality more than anything. And, you know, so we started running together at noon, you know, 3 mile run we did. And it wasn't very fast because I had to run with you. So I was a big distance guy, but, you know.
I'm pretty sure I was holding you back.
I try to hang in there with you, but but yeah, so you got down at one point, I think you were 235, and
yeah.
And that was really good. And because, you know, you were still very strong, particularly in your lower body, and you were naturally very strong in the lower body. I can't even remember many people getting you off your feet in the pocket. You know, you'd have to work to get you off your feet.
Well, I always said I was a fullback playing quarterback or a linebacker playing quarterback. So, yeah.
We'll talk about this a little bit, but you know, I know back in Durham they had you as a fullback in middle school, if I remember correctly. But
yeah, right in seventh grade.
Gotcha.
Yep. But yeah, so when I honestly, Coach, I'd only lifted maybe two or three times in high school.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about lifting. I remember the first time in eighth grade. There was like a storage room / weight room, and me and my friend snuck in there. And he was like, "Oh, Dave, why don't you see how much you can lift on this bar?" And he put 45 on each side, and I threw it up no problem. He's like, "Oh, wow, you're strong." And I was like, "I don't know if that is strong. I don't know what strong is." So, and never learned it until I got to you. But high school was just go out and play. You know, back in the 90s, you had a specialty coach for everything. You didn't go off to a training facility. Heck, there was hardly any gyms other than like Gold's Gym, and that was it, you know. So, and I didn't even know where they were. So that wasn't really a thing until, and I tell people this, it's a funny story. I'm like, I thought as long as I was eating all five food groups, I was doing good. So pizza had every food group on it. So I'm doing what they tell me to do in school, eat your five food groups. I didn't know anything about proportion. I didn't know anything about like, this is bad because it's been fried. I thought if I was eating a chicken sandwich from Wendy's, a fried chicken sandwich, that was good. So I had no clue. Until I got with you and you were like, look, we got to start running. You got to stop eating fried stuff so much.
Yeah.
You got to change your diet. And I was serious about playing quarterback. I didn't want to play any other position. I told you this story when I was there for my son's recruiting visit. I was there like one of the first few days and a bunch of older D linemen were sitting in their locker and they were like, hey, fat boy, what position you play? I said, I play quarterback. And they said, oh, man, please. You're going to be down here with us, putting your hand in the ground. Uh-huh. Keep eating like you eating. You're going to be down here with us. No, sir. I do not want to put my hand in the ground. So I knew it was going to take some work for me to lose some weight. But I didn't care. I was ready to do whatever it took. All my freshmen class buddies were all getting mad because I'm not lifting any weights. They're in there killing themselves. I mean, they're getting strong and they're lifting, but they are mad because I'm over here on the stepmaster trying to sweat. They're like, why is Dave never lifting weights with us? Well, Dave got other stuff he got to do. He got to get right.
Yeah, we had to try to individualize your program a little bit.
Yeah.
You had a lot of natural strength.
Yeah, well, and I really do appreciate it. And I was just telling my wife the other day, I said, you know what? I bet Coach Connors and Coach Logan got together at some point. I didn't even think about this until when I saw you. But I bet you they had to think of, hey, Coach, what are you going to do with this young freshman that we got? He's got to lose some weight. Like, what's your plan? Coach, I never thought that y'all got together and planned out something for me, you know, but I'm sure there was some kind of conversation that was had and I appreciate it.
Well, Coach Logan, yeah, he was my guy, man. And he was always in the plan for whatever I was going to do, you know, but I always appreciated him so much because he would turn me loose and let me do what I pretty much wanted to do.
Yeah.
even though I was out there on the edge somewhere. But, you know, talking about, you know, Coach Logan, of course, you know, looking at Jeff Blake and Mark C. and Danny Gonzalez and you, and then there was a couple, you know, Michael Anderson in there, Bobby Weaver, you know, so many quarterbacks that were influenced by Coach Logan and his knowledge of the game, of course, and that position and offense. And then how much I appreciated working for Coach Logan, because he always treated me so good and gave me a lot of autonomy. And so I think he influenced, you know, a lot of people in a lot of great ways. I always say that his moral compass pointed true north. And, you know, that part of him probably stuck with a lot of us, you know, like, man, someday I'd like to be like Steve Logan, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was something that it was kind of like close to my heart, you know, my relationship with him.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about his influence with you and, you know, of course, a part of my podcast is, you know, your spiritual life. It is a Christian podcast. I love guys that tell stories about any kind of influence that you feel like Christ has had in your life. And when we talked about the NFL experience, and I don't know if you want to go back to this, but, you know, if you want to talk a little bit about your illness, yeah, and your recovery with that as well. But his influence on you from a spiritual standpoint as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Coach Logan was a lot of things to me. You know, he was, you know, basically a dad when I got there and a mentor. Like you said, somebody showing you the right way to live their life as a man. And, you know, he had a lot of funny puns, a lot of jokes that were dry, humored, but still would, you know, make you bust your gut when he would say stuff. But the best thing that he told me one day, you know, talking about our faith and everything, was he said, I think this was probably right after my sophomore season, like my redshirt sophomore season. We had just had a great season. Went to HoustonGalleryFurniture.com Bowl, had a great bowl game there. And he says, after that season, we're, you know, kind of getting ready for the next off-season workouts and stuff. And he says, Dave, you just had a great season, but I just want to tell you, son, you'll never be a complete man without one thing. And I was like, man, what is it? I mean, I'm doing really good, you know, playing, and you know, my grades are good, like I got a girlfriend, I'm treating her good, like what can he be talking about? And he said, your faith in God, you'll never have a complete life if you don't give your heart to Jesus. And it just made me think about it. And he said, you know, it's going to be up to you and the time that you're going to do it, but you'll never be a complete man, a complete player without that side. And it really made me think. And, you know, Chuck Young being our team chaplain, you know, I was going to his dinners and those kind of things, the Bible studies. But, you know, I was there for the social time, for the food, also to hear the message, you know. But at that time, I just kept saying, well, when I finally get my life right, then, you know, maybe then I can give my life to God, and which is completely backwards, because you never get your life right, you know, if you're going to go off of that model. So I do remember that weighing heavy on me after he said that. And I don't know how long after it was, but I don't think it was much longer, because, you know, just like you were saying, a lot of stuff Coach Logan said, you know, you take to heart and it really makes you think. We were at McAllister's right there on Greenville Boulevard, me and Chuck Young just having lunch. And he said, you know, you can give your heart at any time. And I thought, what do you mean? Like right here in McAllister's, like at lunch with all these people in here? And he's like, absolutely. Like whenever you feel you're ready, you can give your heart. And I was like, well, I guess I feel like I'm ready now, Coach. Or Chuck, and we sat there, and he helped me ask the Lord to come into my life, come into my heart, and for me to be able to live a Christian and godly life from that point forward. You know, of course, I wasn't perfect, still ain't, still got a lot of work to do, but I know now that my end goal is the best thing ever, and that's to be with Jesus.
Yeah, praise God for that day, brother.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Actually, like it was yesterday.
Yeah, well, we used to meet at Ragazzi's and eat dinner before he'd go do his show on Sundays. And, you know, it was just I was kind of shook because Steve seemed a little bit shook at that time. And I don't really know what was going on between with political stuff going on or the AD or whatever, but there were some things going on that really influenced me when I had the opportunity to leave. I felt like I should go because I needed to make sure that I was in the best situation for my family. And I actually went and interviewed for the job the night of the bowl game that you're talking about. I got back on the plane and went straight to Chapel Hill, and I was interviewing like 11:30, 12 at night.
Wow.
And so it was just a crazy deal, man. But I just felt like that maybe God was providing me with this opportunity.
Yeah.
But, you know, and the reason I'm saying that is because I want to go back and just basically tell you, wow, how hard that was for me to leave those guys on that team. Because, you know, I like spending my time with the players. I didn't really like spending my time with the coaches that much.
Yeah.
Administrators. I just wanted to be down in the trenches with the players. There was, of course, you know, I could say they were my friends, but, you know, it's a different type of friendship, of course. But at the same time, that was so hard for me. And Antoine Yelverton was actually jumping in my car when I was leaving and stuff like that. I'm telling you, man, I got choked up big time on the way to Chapel Hill.
Yeah.
But, you know, I had a chance to, you know, I played ECU 5 times, then came back to ECU, played Chapel Hill 5 times. The last 3 times we played Carolina, we scored 160 points total and won all 3 games.
Yeah.
I can say that.
Yep.
But when you guys came up there to play that first year I was there, I was almost physically sick on the sideline, looking at Lefevre and Purnell and L-Train and all those guys out there. And then when I said, okay, first play of the game, I think you hit Terrence with a flag pattern.
Yeah.
It was a long gainer. I don't think it scored.
Yeah.
But I said, oh, okay, here we go. You know, because ECU had a great team. I mean, it had a great I'm talking about talent, but at the same time, it was way beyond talent back then. It was something extremely special. With the camaraderie.
Absolutely.
And that's what I want to kind of, I can't quit talking about that part of my career because it was so special what happened through those years in relationship to something like I've never seen before. Because like when we went out and did 300s or whatever, like say we're going to go run 300s. And of course you made 10 300s and 30 with 30 seconds rest. At, you know, you probably might have weighed 245 right then or something like that. But how you made those was with the help of the teammates. But the biggest thing I say is that, you know, it wasn't like somebody did well or somebody won in the fourth quarter because, oh, they, you know, they were so intimidated by the 300s and knew how to had to make them or whatever. What it was these guys didn't want to disappoint each other.
Yeah.
It wasn't about me.
Yeah.
It was about guys who had grown into a mentality where we do not want to disappoint our brothers. And all I did was sit back and just watch. And I was like, man, this is the best thing that, I mean, as far as preparation, as far as team attitude, team chemistry, camaraderie, whatever you want to talk about, it does not get better than that.
Yeah.
Because what you saw at the end of the summer was, I'd give the guys a gold shirt when they made it. You got 75 guys out there in a gold shirt taking on the responsibility of a coach, getting the last 10 guys through it.
Yeah.
And that's what it was about.
Coach, you're hitting it on the head, because I can remember quite a few times there would be guys, you know, starting to struggle. They're getting to, you know, rep 8 and 9, and you can see that piano jumping on their back. But there would be other guys who had already completed all theirs, and they're out there trying to help wheel them through the last few reps so that they could get that gold shirt, so that we could have 100% of everybody completing those 300s. And it's not just the 300s, it's the stadium carries. I mean, I was telling my son what we had to do, and he was like, are you serious? Is that real life? Y'all carried each other up the stadiums? Like, all those kind of things, Coach, really instilled in us, like, we're a team. We're going to live and die together as a team. And when we get into the fourth quarter, those same guys that had your back on those 300s, you now got their back when we get down here in the trenches and we need a play to be made. Like, everybody's pulling in the same direction. There was so much of that because it was always instilled in us, it's hard being a Pirate. Like,
yeah,
we can go to a lot of these other schools with big budgets and all these other fancy things. But when you're here, you're going to come to work. You're going to work hard. And we're going to show up on game day and give the same kind of enthusiasm and energy on game day. Like, it never changed. So we appreciate that from you, because you were the leader when it came to that kind of stuff.
Well, I was down at my little house at the beach. I got a little piece of wood up on a mantle. Says, Pirate life ain't no easy life.
Yes, sir.
And, that was the truth for everybody.
Right.
But, you know, I'm really excited now when I look out here and I look at the, you know, I took some guys down to the Masters tournament, but I, you know, watching the last day on TV and looking at Scottie Scheffler, who's very outspoken about his relationship with Christ, looking at I think it's Aaron Brooks said, four-time NCAA wrestling champ at Penn State, wears the headband around us, 100% Jesus. Now ECU baseball, you know, I had Cliff on.
Yeah.
And he's really found the Lord. And you know, and I really believe that they're going to go to the dance this year to Omaha.
Yeah,
and I think that one of the big reasons is because of where Cliff has gone, you know, with his faith.
Yeah.
You know, I believe that 100%.
That's awesome.
But all these guys coming out and talking about how they've gained such success because of, you know, their what's going on in their life from a spiritual standpoint. It's really great to see. So, but yeah, so just a couple more questions here. What are the games? Are there any games you'd like to get back from ECU?
Well, there's only one game that I'd like to get back, and that was the last game I played in at ECU, and that was against Marshall.
Right.
Funny story about that. Everybody knows that Byron Leftwich was drafted to the Jaguars, and we were both there. It just happened to be the very next year after we had played in that bowl game. So I thought once I got drafted by the Jaguars, okay, good. I'm rid of that guy. I don't have to see him. And then the very next year, we drafted him number one. Like, I think it was like the fifth or sixth pick. And he wanted to talk about that game every day in the locker room, in our meeting room. Like I could not get away from it. So I said, you know what? The only thing I can do is take his job. So
there you go.
That was my way of one-upping him.
There you go.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I watched it at my house. I'll never forget it. I watched it at my house in Chapel Hill. It was 64-61, correct?
Yep.
Okay, yeah. I don't forget it because it was such a crazy game.
It was. And right before the game, I was warming up and something was wrong with my ankle. It felt like I couldn't really step on my foot very good. Almost like there was a floating piece kind of floating around in my ankle, and it went away. I'd felt it before, but I was like, body, please don't fail me now. You've been good to me this whole time. Don't let me down now. And once we ran down that field, I was just fine. It couldn't be better. So, but Leonard Henry running that ball the way he was doing in that game, man. My hat goes off to him and the person he is. You know, he's a pastor now.
I talked to Leonard pretty often, and I've had him on several podcasts.
Oh, that's good.
And you know what a great thing he's doing in the world right now.
Absolutely.
And Leonard is an awesome pastor.
Yeah, that's good.
Tell
him talk to him.
Oh yeah, no doubt. Now, who do you stay in touch with?
So you remember Charlie Robinson?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so he's my financial advisor actually.
Okay.
And we are real estate partners too. So we're actually doing a lot of work there in Greenville, and we're trying to build affordable homes and even nicer in homes for the community there. They are really lacking in their in the amount of homes they have available for right. purchase. So it's going well. We've got a couple other partners with that. They're all pirates. We're all pirates. So, you know, we're trying to help our pirate community as much as we can in that realm. So I see Vontae. I talk to Vontae every once in a while. You know, everybody's got their families and their kids and all the stuff they got going on. So, you know, life is a blur and real busy for a lot of us. So it's kind of tough to, you know, to be able to keep up with everybody. But, you know, that's what Facebook and Instagram is for.
Yeah, my wife has been a long time realtor here in Greenville, and she's my hero.
Yeah.
I think when I retired, she was making more money than me. So, I mean, at that time. So,
let somebody else make the money, Coach.
Yeah, she's incredible. She does a great job. So I'm a little bit familiar with that business, I guess you could say, and what's going on in Greenville. And there's always seems to be a lot going on in Greenville where those things are concerned.
Yeah.
She works for Michael Overton. And I think he's got a whole lot of different things going on, and he's got a pretty big group.
Yep.
So, you know, before we sign out here, I kind of wanted to go back to Durham.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what you've been through there and what you survived and what you had alluded to is really something I think worth talking about is where your story is concerned, some of the things you overcame and just, can you just kind of go back and talk a little bit about that and maybe just talk about your mom a little bit more?
Yeah, absolutely. My mother to me could do no wrong. She was a nurse with the VA hospital and she would get awards for prettiest smile and, you know, hardest worker on the floor. All those kind of things that, you know, I didn't know what was really going on. I knew she helped people that were sick and that kind of stuff. You know, but then she got diagnosed with breast cancer when I was 14. And, you know, it was, of course, a blow to the family because she was our only parent in the house and she was everything to us. And, you know, for 2 years, she battled at one point. They thought they got everything and she was doing much better, but then they found some more stuff and then she went back downhill again. And, you know, the time that we had with her, was amazing. You know, it's the saddest part, honestly, now is that my kids have never got to meet her, you know. But my wife's parents, my in-laws, they are great. They made sure to pick up the slack for all that. You know, so, but for me and my sister, Adrian, you know, it was tough, and it still is. But you know, everybody's turned out pretty good. My oldest brother, is doing great. My, other brother, Quincy, you know, married, his kids have just now gotten out of the house. So he's, you know, he's him and his wife, they're free now. And, you know, me and my sister, she's actually coming down to visit next month. So we're all still together and, you know, keeping everybody's spirits up and you know, making sure everybody's doing okay. And but yeah, when you're 16 and you're just still in the ninth grade, going to be a sophomore, like it's a tough blow because now everybody is looking at you as, well, now you don't have your mom anymore. Like, what kind of person are you going to be? How are you going to turn out? All you have is an older brother at the house and all those kind of things, you know? So I attribute a lot of it to, at that time, my sports really keeping me. My offensive coordinator in high school, he was great for me. He tried to fill that father figure role as much as he could, and he was the one who really kept putting me on to East Carolina. He kept saying, Dave, I know you're a Wolfpack fan, but ECU, they're known for their quarterbacks, and let me tell you about this, let me give you these stats. And in 1992 they won the Peach Bowl. Well, he was there at ECU, and he was in the equipment staff when he was when he went to school there. So he was all about ECU. And he just kept talking about it. And I kept saying, Coach, why do you keep talking about this school? I don't even know the school you're talking about. Like, stop talking about them. What about the Wolfpack? They just played on Saturday and they did amazing. And he's like, yeah, but they're no ECU, you know. So he brought me there on my visit. The year I came, it was a snowstorm. And he said, Dave, I know you got your visit today or tomorrow. Do you still want to try to make it? Like, I'll drive you if you want to go. You know, we'll just drive in the snow and take our time. And we did. It was me and one other person. I can't remember. It might have been Travis Mazik was there. Just me and one other person showed up. And I really appreciate him for what he did for me, because he was the one who really started training me as a quarterback. We'd go into the gym. He would buy VHS tapes of Florida State's one-on-one practices and the 49ers one-on-one practices and their one-on-one tapes. And I just thought, man, these guys aren't missing one pass. Like, they are completing everything. He's like, yeah, that's what they're going to expect from you when you get to the next level. Like, you got to complete balls when there's nobody guarding anybody. And I was like, okay, well, let's start working on this then. So we'd be in the gym. If it was freezing outside, we'd go to the gym and, you know, he'd work on my throwing motion and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I had a lot of people that, you know, recognized something in me and then just said, you know what, let me help this kid as much as I can. You know, he didn't have a parent at home. So let me look. So that's why I try to do those kind of things myself when I, you know, see other kids in similar circles or with my foundation and that kind of stuff.
Well, you evidently have an incredible brother as well. And so hats off to him.
Yeah.
So one more question. Talk a little bit about, I know you've made it a point to give back to ECU. So talk about that a little bit, why it's important for you as a former athlete to give back to East Carolina University.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's where I got my first real start. You know, high school is great and everything, but you don't never know what a kid is going to be, you know, when they come through the doors there. But, you know, when you get off to college and you think you found someone, and then, you know, you're like, okay, well, we got to go run for 3 miles for, you know, at noon every day when he first gets here. Like, you don't know the mental makeup of this kid, and then you're like, okay, he's got some mental makeup, like, but how's he going to do when he performs in the field? And just a lot of moments at ECU I really appreciate. One of the first ones was, I am a redshirt, I haven't even played, and we're struggling a little bit that year. This was in 97, and Gonzalez is the quarterback. We're struggling a little bit, he's not playing terrible or anything, but I just remember the fans yelling my name in the stadium, and I was like, y'all haven't even seen me play. How do y'all even know who I am? Like, I didn't even know how they knew my name, and I was so oblivious to so much, Coach. I didn't know anything about anything, but they were chanting my name, and I thought, well, I better not let these people down next year when I start playing. But just the excitement of playing in all those games, playing South Carolina down in South Carolina, beating them, an SEC school. I mean, we're Conference USA. We're not supposed to be beating SEC schools. And then we have Miami come to town, and there's a hurricane that there's so many magical things, you know, Coach, from those years that that have stuck with me, and I was able to be, you know, a small little part of it to, you know, help shape me and my football career. So that's why I love it because our fans were there that night. We played Miami and we're down 23-3, whatever it is, at half. And our fans are like, look, we love this team. We love this school. We don't care. We're going to sit here and scream and chant for them at halftime. And we were down. And, you know, they weren't filing out of there. They were like, look, y'all come out and give us something more to scream about. And I just remember Coach Logan, we're all getting in there. Everybody's got their heads down a little bit. And he said, I want to see everybody's eyes. I want to see everybody's eyes. Open those doors. Open those doors. He had the doors opened up, and all they were screaming was, ECU, ECU. I mean, it gives me chills right now thinking about it. And he said, I just want that to sink in. And I don't want anybody else to say anything else. Just let those fans, y'all listen to those fans who traveled all this way. In the middle of a flood, they probably lost their homes, and they're here to support you guys. And man, it set us off, and we went back out there, came back and won the ball game. So it wasn't just one thing that makes me want to give back to ECU. It's all the things. Even when we go back now, and all the Pirates are still there, and they still look out for me and my family and my son now being recruited by him. I mean, just to be full circle with that is, that's why I love ECU.
Gotcha. Well, I really appreciate that. And I was blessed to be there for it.
Yes. And I was blessed to have you as my strength and conditioning.
I remember Santana Moss running straight by me in the first quarter. Looked like he was running about 400 miles an hour. I was like, oh my God.
How are we supposed to stay up with these guys? These guys are fast. But we did.
Great stuff, man.
Yes, well, sir.
I'll be talking to you sometime in the future, I'm sure. And we'll stay in touch. And thank you so much for coming on.
Anytime,
and,
Coach.
I know you got to do some things with your kids, so I'm going to go ahead and sign off.
I got to go out to this practice right now. They ain't waiting on me, I can tell you that much. But I'm going to get out there.
The tsunami, baby. The tsunami.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, this is Jeff Connors signing off for Absolute Empowerment. God bless. We'll see you next week. Thanks a lot, Dave.
Thanks, Coach.